fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app.
Get packs of juicy red, green, black, or tri-color variety seedless grapes for $3.99 each. Then get tender boneless chuck roast or steaks for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know who you are?
Steven is my name.
Even Steven.
Will you say something, Steven?
Steven or Else Media.
Hey, folks, just a quick announcement before we start today's episode. I just wanted to tease something that's coming up and tell you how you might be able to win a Conan trade from Marvel's 2019 run. So on the evening of Tuesday, October the 1st, I'll be getting together with Simon, my 22-year-old son, and Joe, an old friend of Simon's, as well as his current roommate. And the three of us are going to watch Conan the Destroyer and then immediately record an episode of Hither Came Conan where we talk about the movie. See, I recently learned that Joe had been reading the old Robert E. Howard Conan stories and that he's also been listening to the podcast. Hey, Joe, what do you know? Kokomo? Anyway, I thought it would be fun to bring Joe into an episode and to bring Simon along with him. But I wasn't sure exactly what we were going to talk about. And after giving it a bit of thought, I realized that neither of these young fellers have watched either of the two Arnold Schwarzenegger Conan movies. And since the one that introduced me to Conan was Conan the Destroyer, that's the one I chose. So yeah, that's what we're going to do. As for you, dear listener, let's talk about how you can win a Conan trade. Well, it was my birthday recently, and Simon, my boy, he got me the Conan the Barbarian, The Life and Death of Conan Book 1 trade paperback, which collects issues 1 through 6 of Marvel's Conan the Barbarian relaunch from 2019. It was written by Jason Aaron and features art by the amazing Mahmoud Asrar. And it is a great, 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 great read. And now that I've read it, I want to pass it on to somebody else. And that somebody just might be you. So what do you got to do to win this trade? Well, I'll tell you what. Stay tuned right to the very end of this episode for all of the details and learn how you might be able to win that trade. For now, let's get into today's episode. The following episode will contain the names of people and places set in the fictional world of the Hyborian Age. Furthermore, if I am unable to find these names spoken aloud on YouTube or in an audiobook, they are names that I will certainly pronounce incorrectly in almost every single instance. Listener discretion is advised.
Between the years when the oceans drank Atlantis and the rise of the sons of Arius, there was an age undreamed of, when shining kingdoms lay spread across the world. Hither came Conan, the Cimmerian, sword in hand. It is I, his chronicler, who knows well his saga. Now let me tell you of the days of high adventure.
Stephen or Else Media, this is Hither Came Conan, the podcast with tons of heart, yet very little motivation. I mean, I love podcasting. I love talking about comics, but some days, I don't know, just seems like a lot of work. I'm your host. My name is Stephen, and I am back once more to guide you through the ancient lands of Hyboria, one comic book at a time. Today, we find ourselves south of the Vilayet Sea as we take a look at Conan the Barbarian number 28. This issue sports a cover date of July 1973, though it hit the stands in April. It sold for just 20 cents, and it is entitled Moon of Zimbabwe. It was written by Roy Thomas, with pencils by John Buscema, inks by Ernie Chan, the letters were by John Costanza, and Glynis Ween was the colorist.
Into the boat!
Conan, our favorite hulking Sumerian powerhouse, whose bicipital thews make tree trunks look like twigs, having trudged through the sweltering desert south of the Vilayet Sea, has traveled into a rain-soaked, steamy jungle north of Zimbabwe, where, with thirst foremost on his mind, he lies before a small pond, drinking his fill.
I'm Phil, by the way.
It's as he slurps away that he's attacked by a giant snake. But this ain't no regular snake. It's longer than Conan is tall, and its head is the same size as the barbarian's sun-baked melon. And oh yeah, it's also got two legs. A pair of claw-toed forelegs, which the creature doesn't use in any way as it wraps itself around the Cimmerian. The two wrestle for a bit on the edge of the small pond before they both roll into a bog.
That sucks.
As their life and death struggle continues, Conan and his opponent begin sinking deeper and deeper. The Cimmerian, realizing that he may not walk away from this one, puts all his strength into choking the life out of the big two-legged snake. Suddenly a blade flashes and the snake collapses dead, probably due to the fact that its head has been sliced cleanly from its body. Enter Thutmekri, a Stygian with no love for barbarians. It was his knife that killed the snake, and now that Conan sinks deeper into the bog, Thutmekri refuses to help him.
Wow, what a dick.
Instead, traveling with a white slave woman and a few servants, he takes off, leaving Conan to his slow doom. But Conan is not the type to just roll over and die. Using the dead snake's body like a rope in some twisted tug-of-war, he hauls himself out of the muck, fueled by sheer willpower and the kind of rage that would make a god cross to the other side of the street. Then, taking up the dagger Thutmekri left behind,
"Well, is this a dagger I see before me?"
Conan coats the blade in the dead snake's venom, and then sets out to track down the sly Stygian for a little bit of old-fashioned revenge.
Revenge!
As he crashes through the rainforest, Conan stumbles upon Thutmekri's bearers. Only, they're not so much carrying stuff as they were scattered lifeless around the camp. As for Thutmekri, he's gone from predator to prey, tied to a tree like some macabre decoration. Conan, curious over the circumstances that put the Stygian in the tree, cuts the man down. In exchange for his freedom, Thutmekri spills the beans. He has stolen a sacred idol, a golden ape no less, from Zimbabwe, and tells Conan that all of this must be the work of a mysterious man named Dalbur, and that if the Cimmerian retrieves the idol, the Stygian will reward him richly. And so, in a twist that will surprise absolutely no one, Conan decides to hunt down Dalbur and retrieve the treasure. Because, well, that's what Conan does.
Well, you know, I do what I do and I do what I do.
Soon, Conan meets M'Gora, another member of Thutmekri's ill-fated party. M'Gora looks as if he's been beaten up, and he tells Conan that the witch dancers of Zimbabwe, not exactly the friendliest folks around, have snatched Helgi, Thutmekri's slave girl, to be used in a sacrificial ritual, and that Dalbur is their leader. Now let's be honest, Conan is not one to let a damsel in distress stay in distress, not if there's something that he can do about it. Plus, this particular damsel is a hot, half-naked blonde damsel, so yeah, it's not long before Conan's off once again, crashing through the jungle like a one-man cavalry. When Conan finally catches up to the witch dancers, he finds Helgi chained to a tree, looking every bit the sacrificial lamb. Conan creeps across the clearing to free her when he falls into a hidden pit. Turns out it was just one big old trap set by M'Gora, who Conan learns has been possessed by the mysterious Dalbur, or, as I have taken to calling him by this point, Dalbur the Unseen, because we never see him. With Conan trapped in the pit, the other witch dancers arrive and the ritual begins. Conan, however, as we know him, never lets a pit get him down, and soon he's climbed out of it, only to come face to face with Zemba, a hulking, fanged golden ape. The beast is the kind of nightmare fuel that'd make even the bravest warrior take pause. But Conan is just a little bit more than the bravest warrior, and so, clutching the dagger with the venom-coated blade, the Cimmerian charges in. The fight begins, Conan holding his own over the span of 5 pages as he slashes and stabs the great ape over and over and over again. At some point during the melee, the Dalbor-possessed N'Gora tries to intervene to kill Conan himself, but is instead crushed to death in the arms of Zemba the Ape. Eventually, as Conan continues his battle with the Great Golden Ape, the venom on his dagger does its job, and the beast suddenly keels over and dies. Conan then turns to face the witch dancers who, as one, flee into the jungle. With the monster dead and the Dalbor-possessed N'Gora out of the picture, Conan cuts Helgi loose, and she promptly cries herself to sleep in the big barbarian's muscly arms.
You're so big and so well-grown.
And so, as the issue ends, Conan, Helgi asleep in his arms, walks off into the moonlight, vowing to himself that, when she wakes, he will remove her slave bands and then set her free. Eventually. All right, so this story is based on the Robert E. Howard story of the same name, though Bob's version was later renamed to The Grisly Horror, and it was first published in the February 1935 issue of Weird Tales. It's also, by the way, not a Conan story, and it shouldn't be confused with Red Moon of Zimbabwe, which is a Conan tale, but that one was written by L. Sprague de Camp and Lynn Carter, and it was first published in the July 1974 magazine Fantastic, which is a great name for a magazine. But that came out like a year and 3 months after this issue, and other than the character of Conan himself, it is not in any way related to either Bob's version or Roy's. Anyway, the Robert E. Howard story is set in the southern United States during the 1930s, which would have been present day for old Bob. It stars a fella by the name of Bristol McGrath, and from what I understand, is quite racist. Now, having said that, I haven't actually read the story myself, and frankly, I've talked about the racism of Robert E. Howard before, and God dang it, I'm sure I will again, but for today, for this episode, I'm just not going to get into it. If I had read Bob's version of the story, then yeah, I'd probably talk about it, but I didn't. So, not gonna. Instead, let's dive a bit deeper into the issue. All right, we'll start off with the cover. This was penciled by Gil Kane and inked by Ernie Chan. I really quite enjoy the cover. It's got Helgi in the background, tied to a tree. Conan is standing in front of her, crouched. He's got a dagger in his hand. And then in the foreground, standing before Conan, is the big golden ape with a great big freaking saber teeth, just these giant fangs coming out of its mouth. And it's slavering. Spittle is dripping from its mouth. And the face on Conan that Gil and Ernie put there on Conan on this cover, I love his face on the cover of this issue. Getting into the issue itself, we're in the jungle. Conan's drinking out of a pond, and this freaking snake with two legs comes crawling out of a tree. Conan, when he's drinking, he can see the reflection of the thing behind him, so he knows it's coming. Well, I mean, I don't think he notices until just before it strikes, which, of course, saves his life. And he's like, Crom! And he turns around and starts wrestling with it. And we learn through the narration that the natives of the region call this creature a Lakmu, and that the name means harbinger or bringer of death.
You're right. I have a horrible, horrible name.
Conan rolls into the bog. He just keeps wrestling with this creature, and he's kind of like, I'm probably going to die, but dang it, I'm going to fight with every last breath I have to either go out killing this thing or killing this thing and then getting the hell out of this bog. But I'm not going to just lie here and let myself die. It's not what I do. That's not the Conan way. But then Thutmekri shows up and throws a dagger, which slices the big snake's head clean from its body. It's a nice three panel bit of art here, where basically in the first panel, all three panels are the same size, but the first panel is the thing's head and Conan's forearms and hands wrapped around its neck. And then the second panel, if I wouldn't have known better, if this is the first time I read this book, I might go, holy crap, somebody shot it. Because there's this like streak of light that's supposed to represent motion, that that something just flew through the snake's neck, and the snake's head is just flying off the top of it. And there is a great big splash of blood, which is black because, again, they had to deal with the Comics Code Authority back then. And for some reason, black blood is better than red blood, even though I think it just looks creepy as hell when the blood is black. But the third panel, it's so I'm not describing this very well, but all three panels basically are the same, except for in the second panel, the snake's head is being exploded from its body. That's what it looks like. And then in the third panel, we have the snake with no head, and there's blood just pouring out of the top of its stump. And Conan's going, Mitra, which I've always wondered that about Conan. I know that, you know, his people, the Sumerians, they don't pray to Crom because Crom doesn't give a fuck. He's just up there on his mountain. He's like, look, I made this world for you and I put you in it. Now you're on your own. Leave me alone, which is basically the kind of father I am. You know, that's what I told my kids. I brought you into the world. Leave me alone. Take care of yourself. That's how I roll. So I get Crom. Crom and I could be good buddies. So I guess Conan feels the need to pray to some god. And so he's chosen Mitra. But here he's just calling out the name of the god. Mitra, kind of like we'd go, Jesus, you know. But I don't know. In the movies, he would go, Crom.
Crom.
You know, so I don't know. I don't know why he doesn't do that here. I don't know why. I get it. If he's going to pray to a god, he's going to choose somebody other than Crom. Because, again, Crom don't care. But if he's just going to call out in surprise, you think he'd say Crom. Or Jesus Christ!
Ow, Jesus Christ!
Shut up! Sorry!
But they didn't know. They didn't know Jesus. They didn't know Jesus back then.
Hither Came Conan will return after these messages.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get packs of juicy red, green, black, or tri-color variety seedless grapes for $3.99 each. Then get tender boneless chuck roast or steaks for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And now back to Hither Came Conan.
So Conan is, he's still got the snake body wrapped around him. He's in the bog. The head is laying next to him. He's holding the body of the snake, which in this panel is just still pouring blood out of it, but it's red in this panel. And there's a dagger lying there next to the snake head, and it's covered in red blood. And I don't know, maybe in the original it was black. I'm looking at, of course, a reprint from one of the Marvel Epic collections. So, but here's where we meet Thutmekri. Now, Thutmekri, the character, actually comes out of a Robert E. Howard Conan story. It's the Jewels of Gwalior. And in that story, Conan is here in this, what would now be the African nation or the African continent, but it's the I don't remember what they call it in Hyboria, Kosh or whatever, but is it Kush? I don't know. He's there to steal these jewels of Gwalior, and this guy, this Stygian named Thutmekri, shows up, and he's trying to get the jewels as well, and so they're basically going up against each other. But in the story, it's I believe they make mention that Conan and Thutmekri have met before. And it's a story that would be set later in Conan's life. So in regard to where Conan is now in this issue, the Jewels of Gwalior happen later. And so what Roy did was he brings Thutmekri into this issue. And basically in the Marvel universe of Conan, this will be the first time that Conan meets Thutmekri. So if at some point down the road, Roy adapts the Jewels of Gwalior, then we'll get a return of this character.
I will return for you.
There's a moment here where basically Thutmekri, he makes his displeasure or his disgust of barbarians. He makes it very clear. And he basically tells Conan that he's not going to help him. He's got these three or four dudes with him and this slave girl Helgi. And speaking of her real quick, I just want to say that in the chapter of Roy Thomas's book, Barbarian Life, a literary biography of Conan the Barbarian, volume one, he ends that chapter by basically saying that he loved this issue. He loved this story. And the thing that he loved most about it is the fact that John Buscema drew Helgi in this. Basically, she's wearing a vest with nothing underneath it. And we get a lot of shots of her cleavage. And Roy really liked that. He kind of dug that. That was his favorite thing about this entire issue, was drawings of cleavage.
Respect these boobies.
But anyway, Conan's there sinking in the bog. Helgi brings up Dalbor to Thutmekri.
Master, we lose time here. Soon it will be dark and the drums will start again. And then the one you call Dalbor.
And that's when Thutmekri just freaks out and slaps her.
I told you to never mention his name to me. Never! Do you hear me?
He slaps her. Conan sees this and he's pissed. I mean, first of all, he's angry that they're all just going to let him die. And secondly, he doesn't like to see people manhandle women. He doesn't like to see dudes slapping women around. And so he picks up the head of this giant snake and he throws it at Thutmekri, who he manages to dodge out of the way. He doesn't get hit by it. But I think that's this has got to be probably my favorite scene in the issue. Just the fact that Conan sinking in quicksand and the fact that he throws that snake head at Thutmekri, that just, oh my God, it's a great, wonderful thing for Conan to do. And it endears me more to Conan. The fact that here he is, he's sinking, he's going to die, but he sees Thutmekri slap a woman around and it pisses him off. And the only thing he's got around him, well, he's got that dagger. I don't think he quite noticed the dagger at that point. The snake's head is much closer to him, and he just picks it up and pitches it at Thutmekri like a fastball in a baseball game. But again, it doesn't hit Thutmekri, and it just pisses him off even more. And so he and his slave girl and his other dudes leave. Conan then notices the dagger. He stretches out for it. It takes him a while to grab it, but he uses it to stab the creature, the snake, right below where its head used to be. And then he basically uses this snake like a rope. He tosses the end with the dagger stuck into it at the tree. There's a tree next to this big batch of quicksand, and the tree has two branches coming off of the trunk like a big V. And he throws the snake in between the V, and with the knife sticking through the snake, with the hilt coming out of the one end and the blade coming out of the other, he basically uses it like a frickin' grappling hook or something, and it allows him, you know, it gets stuck there in the V of the tree, in essence. And then he uses it like a great big old gross rope and climbs out of the bog.
My God, are you still talking?
Once out, he decides that he is gonna go kick Thutmekri's ass and has this idea to take the dagger and coat it with the snake's venom. You know, just in case. And then he sets out into the jungle and he finds one of Thutmekri's bearers. Well, actually both of them. He's basically Thutmekri along with the slave girl Helgi. He had these three dudes with him. Two of them were his bearers and they were holding between them something covered with a sheet. We don't really see it. They don't really make mention of it. We just notice that they have basically what's like a litter. And there is there's something atop the litter that's maybe head and shoulders tall. But crashing through the rainforest, Conan stumbles across the two bearers. The litter has been broken apart. It's laying there in pieces, and both of the bearers look like they are dead. And that's when he finds Thutmekri hanging from his ankles from a tree. His shirt's all ripped up, and he's got rope around his ankles. It's tied to a big tree branch, and he's about, I don't know, a foot off the ground. Conan climbs up the tree and I don't know about this. I don't know about this panel. He happens to, well, all right. So let me try to describe this. He's laying belly down on the branch of this tree and he reaches out and grabs the rope that is attached to the tree. So he grabs the rope down by Thutmekri's feet with one hand. And then with his other hand, he cuts the rope. So now the only thing holding Thutmekri aloft is Conan's arm, his arm and his hand. He's just laying there on the tree branch and he's holding this rope that is attached to Thutmekri's ankles. That's silly enough. I mean, I can almost buy it. I can buy that Conan's strong enough that if he's laying there in the proper position, he has the right kind of leverage, he can hold Thutmekri in his hand and let the dude hang there. But in the very next panel, Conan is coming down the side of the tree. He's got a vine in one hand, so it's like he's rappelling down the side of a cliff, but it's the tree. And he has Thutmekri over his other shoulder, which means that while he was up there on the branch holding Thutmekri, he somehow manages to pull the dude up onto the branch with him. And he is one strong dude. That's all I'm going to say. That's an amazing feat of muscly madness. I don't know what I meant to say there, but anyway, Thutmekri tells Conan his story about how he stole this golden image from a temple in Zimbabwe. It's a statue of a golden gorilla. It's the people of Zimbabwe. It's their representation of their god. That's what the two bearers were carrying on that litter. And then Thutmekri says that they escaped with this statue. They fled north across the desert. Along the way, he purchases the slave girl, Helgi, to keep him warm in climates increasingly cool.
Say no more.
And then eventually they meet Conan, and he mentions that all of this must have happened. The person who is hunting them, trying to get this golden ape statue back, is a guy named Dalbor, and that is all we know about him. It's pretty much it. We're not told anything more of Dalbor, except for he's probably the one that is after Thutmekri and killed the bearers and hung him from the tree. That's when he tells Conan that if he goes and gets this idol for him, that he will be paid handsomely. And Conan goes off, of course, to get the idol. He finds M'Gora out in the middle of the jungle, who looks like he's been beat up. And M'Gora tells Conan about the witch dancers of Zimbabwe, how they've taken Helgi and they're going to sacrifice her to their god because tonight is the full moon and they call it the moon of Zimbabwe.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
So Conan and M'Gora trek through the jungle. They come across a clearing. On the other side of the clearing is Helgi tied to two big tree trunks, basically two big sticks of wood stuck into the ground. Conan sees her and immediately goes sprinting across the clearing. And then we find out that in the middle of the clearing is a big pit that was covered over with like branches and grass and stuff. So Conan couldn't see it, but he crashed down into it. And that's when he learns that M'Gora is Dalbor, or at least he is possessed by Dalbor. And in fact, M'Gora or Dalbor says to Conan, because Conan's like, so you are Dalbor? And the guy says,
I am and I am not. The body of Dalbor sits in his thatched hut in far-off Zimbabwe, but he sent his spirit out this night of all nights to take command of the body of the traitor M'Gora.
And so, yeah, obviously Dalbor is some kind of wizard.
He's the wizard.
So thinking that everything's good because Conan is down in this pit, the witch dancers show up and the ritual begins. But the one thing that they didn't know about Conan is that he's a Sumerian and they are natural born climbers. They climb all over the damn place. Growing up in Sumeria, that's all he did was climb stuff. And so Conan climbs out of the pit. In fact, he kind of thinks to himself, or at least the narration says that Conan is thinking to himself that had they known about his climbing ability, they would have lined the bottom of the pit with spikes.
In an iron coffin with spikes on the inside.
Anyway, Conan climbs out. He fights Zimba, the giant gorilla, the giant ape, which this is at least the second time in this Marvel run that Conan has fought a giant ape. The first, I believe, was Rogues in the House. I don't think he fought a giant ape before that or after that until now. But I feel like a number of Robert E. Howard Conan stories have giant apes in them that Conan has to fight, which I don't know what that means about Robert E. Howard, because he obviously had a good imagination. He knew how to write. But when it came to creatures for Conan to fight, I don't know, 75% of the time, he chose a big gorilla.
Morning, Mrs. Gorilla.
Now, at the time, of course, gorillas were thought to be
you know, big, crazy, angry, man-eating creatures. We know now that they're not, but yeah.
Morning, Mrs. Non-Gorilla.
The sequence, however, of Conan fighting Zemba, the golden gorilla, it's like 5 pages. It's pretty good. John Buscema does a pretty good job here of the two of them just going back and forth, and Conan is just stabbing this creature over and over and over. Black blood is flying all over the place. Ngora, or Dalbur Asmgora, shows up at one point because he thinks he has a moment here where he can kill Conan, but the ape grabs up Dalbur Ngora and crushes him to death in his big, mighty golden ape arms.
Wow! Hey! Isn't that exciting?
And then eventually, not long after that, within a couple of panels, the ape collapses dead because Conan had this dagger with poison all over it, or venom. Venom from the snake. And so it falls to its death. The witch dancers run away. Conan cuts Helgi down. And I don't know exactly what this is supposed to mean, but but it does say she'll waken. Conan silently vows on the far side of the oasis of hell. Then he'll remove the slave bands around her arm and send her freely on her way. Eventually. What the hell is that supposed to mean?
Hither Came Conan will return after these messages. And now back to Hither Came Conan.
I mean, on the one hand, you could take it to mean that Conan knows that he's a good-looking dude, and once she's awake and he's able to get the slave band off of her arm, she's going to be like, oh, you big muscly man, you saved my life. I'm going to stay with you and we're going to make love every night.
Take me, you barbarian.
And, you know, you could take it that way, or you could take it the way, you could take it the opposite way, where he's basically saying that he'll set her free, but he's going to use her first. He's going to use her for sex. He's going to force himself on her. It's probably somewhere in between, but I don't know. I don't know what Roy was exactly what he was trying to get at with that eventually, other than hint at the fact that the two were going to get it on. It's just kind of left open as far as, is she going to have any say in the matter, right? I feel like with that last word, eventually, it's Roy's way of saying, yeah, they're going to do it.
Hey, yeah, 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 yeah.
But yeah, it's just kind of open-ended. Again, I just got to kind of wonder, is she going to have any choice in the matter? I would like to say yes, but yeah, I don't know. I'm going to give Conan and Roy the benefit of the doubt.
Oh, that's very kind of you.
All in all, it was a fun issue. I think this is the first time we see Conan in a forest or a jungle environment. And it's just one of those little one-off adventures. You know, he's still traveling west. We're assuming he's still heading for Argos, and on that journey, he just happens upon this little adventure, and yeah, it was kind of fun. It wasn't great. This is not a classic Conan tale, but a lot of these issues will not be classic Conan tales. That's just the way, you know, comics were at the time. But yeah, I quite enjoyed it. I'm not ready to start ranking a lot of these issues just yet, but it's not the worst. It's not the best. Somewhere in between. I had fun with it, and that's really all that counts, right? As long as you enjoyed yourself reading the issue, then as far as I'm concerned, the issue has done its job. But that's it, folks. That's all I have to say about Conan the Barbarian number 28, Moon of Zimbabwe. Is there anything you'd like to add? Any comments you want to make? What do you think Roy meant when he said eventually at the end of the comic? Besides the fact that we know that eventually he and Helgi are going to be, you know, making the beast with two backs, which is a stupid thing to say. I've always hated that. But tell me what you think. Share some feedback with me, folks. Feedback@hithercameconan.com. Send in your emails or use your voice app on your phone. Leave a voice mail comment, voice thing, recorded feedback thing, and send it in. Again, feedback@hithercameconan.com. And hey, while you're at it, do me a favor. If you listen to the show on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts or really any podcasting app that has the option to rate the show, I'm urging you to please go and do that right now. The more ratings I have, the easier it is for others to find the show. And Currently over on Spotify, we're sitting at 21 ratings with an average of 4.7 stars. I would like to see that get to 50 by the end of 2024. That's my goal. For Apple Podcasts, we have 12 ratings with an average of 4.5 stars. And so my goal there is 25 ratings by the end of the year. So please, if you listen to the show on one of these two platforms and you haven't had a chance to rate the show, please go do that now. That would be a huge, huge help to me. And remember, you don't have to review the show to leave a rating. That used to be a requirement on Apple Podcasts, but they have since removed that. And on Spotify, there's not even an option to leave a review. So if you've not left a rating because you did not want to write up a review, you just kick that idea straight out your brain cave, because you ain't got to do that anymore. Just rate it and go. Tap, tappity, tip, tip, tap, tappity, tap, 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 tippity, tap. Tap it, tap it, tap it on the phone. Tap the stars.
Give it a little tappy. Tap, tap, tap-a-roo.
But here's the thing. Okay, I'm going to say this real quick. If you do leave a review, I will read it out in a future episode, good or bad. If you leave a review over there on Apple Podcasts, I'm going to read it on a future episode. Deal? All right, then. That's your homework, folks. Your call to action. Rate the show.
Think of the ratings.
Beyond that, tell your friends. Host listening parties. Hang up flyers. Send coded messages in popular TV shows. You know, if you happen to be a TV exec or something like that, you know, if you can do that, do that. You can spread the word using semaphore code and drop leaflets from an airplane. You can use skywriting or telepathic communication. Anything that you can do to get the word out there about the show would be appreciated. But first and foremost, on that list of things that I would love you to do, if you can only do one of those things, leave a rating.
Everybody out.
Next time on Hither Came Conan, the Sumerian with the steely thews walks brazenly into Agrapur, the capital of Turin and the home of Prince Yezdegerd. You know, the guy who wants to see Conan's head on a big spike. While in town, Conan is thrust into a wizard's mysterious machinations as the big barbarian does nothing to hide his presence from authorities. Join us, won't you, when next we meet and get all into Conan the Barbarian number 29, Two Against Turin, published by Marvel Comics in May of 1973. The synopsis used in this episode was taken from MarvelFandom.com with alterations by the host of Hither Came Conan. And that's me. My name is Steven. The information used in this episode comes from Mike's Amazing World of Comics at Mike'sAmazingWorld.com and the book Barbarian Life, a literary biography of Conan the Barbarian, Volume 1, by Roy Thomas, which you can get along with volumes 2 and 3 at SumerianPress.com. And finally, the views and opinions expressed within this episode are mine and mine alone. They do not reflect the official policy or position of Conan, his sword, his steely thews, and especially not his god, Crom.
Crom laughs at your four winds.
And so as our wandering barbarian moves ever closer to the west coast and the Hyborian kingdom of Argos, I bid you a solicitous see ya, along with a reminder that until we meet again in the ether of the internet, keep your swords close by, never stop treading them jeweled thrones, and as always, be nice to each other. See you later, alligator. Bye.
I want to thank you for listening to this episode of Hither Came Conan. Questions and comments can be directed to feedback@hithercameconan.com. If you enjoyed the show, you can help to boost our presence online by leaving a rating or review on your favorite podcast app. I also invite you to join our subscription program, Steven or Else Beyond. And in return, you'll get episodes of Hither Came Conan, along with every other podcast under the Steven or Else Media umbrella, early and ad-free. Check out the link in the show notes, or just go to hithercameconan.com to join today. Hither Came Conan is a presentation of Steven or Else Media. For more nerdy content hosted by me, check out stevenorelse.com.
Many wars and feuds did Conan fight. Honor and fear were heaped upon his name. In time, he became a king by his own hand. This story shall also be told.
I'm your host. My name is Steven, and I am back once more to guide you through the ancient... to guide you... Conan, our favorite hulking Sumerian powerhouse whose bicipital thews make it... Conan, our favorite hulking Sumerian powerhouse whose bicipital thews make tree trunks. That's a hard sentence to say all at once. A pair of claw-toed forelegs, which... A pair of claw-toed forelegs, which the teat... Which I'm out... I keep wanting to say teacher instead of creature. It's because of the claw-toed. Claw-toed teacher, teaching me science. Claw-toed teacher, teaching me things about life and history and other stuff. Anyway, here we go. Let's try it again. A pair of claw-toed forelegs, which the creature doesn't... Good God. The two wrestle a bit on the edge... Suddenly a blade... I should probably check to make sure I'm pronouncing that dude's name right. That I was saying it correctly. Yay, yay, yay for me. As he crashes through the rainforest, Conan... I don't know what's going on with me and seeing and reading and saying stuff. As he crashes through the rainforest, Conan stumbles upon throat. It's thoot, not throot. Conan decides to hunt down Dalbur. Such a stupid name. Conan decides to hunt down Dalbur and receive... Jesus, fuck. He finds Helgi trained to a tree. Chained. Chain. Turns out it was... God damn. Hey, folks. Thanks for sticking around to get all the details and the rules for our very first... Hither Came Conan contest. I'm calling it the colossally cool Hither Came Conan question contest, and it's really quite simple. First, however, I should mention that this is open to U.S. residents only. I do have to apologize to all of my international listeners, but I just can't swing the extra postage to ship a book internationally. I wish I could, but I can't. Sorry. But for those of you in the U.S., in order to win my copy of Conan the Barbarian, The Life and Death of Conan, Book 1, the trade paperback, which collects issues 1 through 6 of Marvel's Conan the Barbarian relaunch from 2019, along with anything else I might want to throw into the box, well, like I said, it's really quite simple. If you recall from the top of the show, on the evening of Tuesday, October the 1st, I'm going to be getting together with my son Simon and his good friend Joe to watch Conan the Destroyer, and then record an episode talking about it. Well, in order to win the trade, all you have to do is email the show with a question for me, Simon, Joe, or all three of us that we can read out and answer while we are recording that episode. It can be specific to Conan the Destroyer, but it didn't have to be. It's an ask us anything type of thing, but there are rules. And if you want to participate, pay attention to this part because... Well, because I'm a neurodivergent and I am a real stickler for the rules. Ready? Rule 1. For every question that you email, you get one entry into the colossally cool Hither Came Conan question contest. In other words, your name or email address goes into a hat, and it will be from that hat that we will draw a winner by the end of the episode. So if you send 25 questions and you follow all of the rules... Your name will be entered into that hat 25 times. Rule number 2, one question per email. Do not send in one email with just a crap ton of questions. It's just going to be easier for me to have one question per email. I can't explain why. It's just going to be. So if you ask more than one question on one email, while we may read and answer that question on the show, you will not be entered into the contest. Rule 3, send your questions to feedback@hithercameconan.com and use question contest in the subject line. This rule is very important because all I want in that subject line are the two words, question contest. If you add anything to that, if you put anything in that subject line other than question contest, well, once again, We may read and answer the questions on the show, but you will not be entered into the contest. Rule number 4, bonus entries are possible if your question is clever, original, or special in whatever way myself, Simon, and Joe decide. This is going to be totally arbitrary. And finally, rule 5, have your questions in by the end of September. That's Monday, September the 30th at 11:59 p.m. Central Standard Time. That's your deadline. But you know what? You don't have to wait. Start sending in those questions now. And that's it, folks. That is the colossally cool Hither Came Conan question contest, where you can win a trade paperback and whatever else I might have that's cool and just laying about that I feel like throwing into the box. Have fun with it, folks. See you next time.
Crumb. I've never prayed to you before. I have no tongue for it. No one, not even you, will remember if we were good men or bad, why we fought or why we died. No. All that matters is that two stood against many. That's what's important. Valor pleases you, Crumb. So grant me one request. Grant me revenge. And if you do not listen, then to hell with you.
I just don't think I can move through life knowing that a guy named Steven did this to me.
How could you let this happen, Steven?
Your podcast sucks.
Enough talk.
Great Crumb.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get packs of juicy red, green, black, or tri-color variety seedless grapes for $3.99 each. Then get tender boneless chuck roast or steaks for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.